Hey, unless you've been under a rock recently, or you've been lost somewhere on another planet, you have to be familiar with the new genre, which is blowing up hip-hop, known as Brooklyn Drill. Today, in our first episode of Let's Talk About Addiction, we evaluate this genre from its very origins in the streets of Chicago, and our experts will talk about how Brooklyn Drill, otherwise known as Chicago Drill or UK Drill, got started, and how individuals who are working within this industry are looking to come up, to get out, and also to create a new means. And the question we want to find out is this upwardly mobile pattern leading to increased rates of drug and alcohol addiction, as well as unnecessary violence in BIPOC communities? You won't want to miss this episode. And now join us as we present the first episode of Let's Talk About Addiction. I'm Dr. Alfonso Brown.
And it's a very interesting book that I started reading, and I have an audio book of it as well, which talks about, you know, the drug culture and the violence culture in the drill scene. So this is the book here. It's called Ballad of the Bullet, and it's by Forrest Stewart. And it goes through the history of drill culture it's in Chicago. And what this gentleman did was he embedded himself within a group called the Corner Boys out in Chicago. And he sort of used his time with them to analyze what, you know, they were doing and why they did it. And I was blown away because it's nothing was like what you would assume from following it today. He essentially made a point of showing that these guys are very, very savvy. And as you have pointed out last week, Brother Tyshawn, they are utilizing this as a means of, you know, ascendancy out of their situation. This gentleman even went as far as to say that a lot of them, you know, the big thing that they crave is authenticity. But a lot of them in their neighborhoods are not the persona that they create on the internet. I mean, and also the sad part was a lot of the things that I might almost take for granted, they want to aspire to. So it's like they have these two personas. One is the online persona, because that's what enables them to become famous and to do well. But then the other one is the behind the scenes persona, where they want to visit their mothers, or they just want to go you know, get another degree or something in education, or they want to go visit their kid's school to see a game that the kid is playing. And a lot of them did not have, because of prior issues, didn't have licenses. So they couldn't get from one side of the town to the other safely, because the guy said they would be, you know, people would attempt to harm them for either their affiliations or what they said in the music. And so one of the ways he was able to connect is he became like a de facto driver for them. And he would agree to take them across town to other areas, or he would remove them, extract them from situations that had overheated, where there was a danger of retaliatory violence. So to cool the situation down, he would take them out, take them to a neutral spot, let things cool down. And this is how he developed this longer term friendship with them. Very powerful book. I'm going to share it with everybody, because I think it might, you know, just in general, if we pick up on this topic and go into more detail. And I think it directly impacts what we're talking about, because he mentions how a lot of these guys, you know, the drugs and the alcohol that they use in the community, it sort of numbs the reality that they have to face. It also helps get them amped and ready for the performances, the video shoots, and the things that they have to deal with. And I think that that's something that we should talk about, because it's something that's underlying, I think, a lot of what's going on. But this is a very, very complex issue, much more than I had anticipated, and it's a really good read. So I'd like to pass that on to everyone to take a look at, and you can bring it up on further discussions.
Sure.
So,
folks, hi there.
Yeah. So, you know, it's funny that you should mention that, because I was telling my son, I was talking to my son about the music that he listens to, and I recognize that most of those young artists, they talk about using oxys and fentanyls and Percocets and smoking and drinking. And this is the younger generation. Like, this is my son's age group, that generation. And a lot of their music, they talk about how they use the oxys and they use the fentanyl and... there's another one that's real popular in the rap culture that, what is it? Codeine. Thanks, Bo.
Syrup, I think, right?
That's my son. You know, and so it's funny that you should talk about how it gives them the motivation that they need, but it also numbs the reality of what's happening in their lives and in their communities.
Shoot, Lyle, we should have your son on here. He's involved already. He's like, Cody, uh-huh.
Well, that's because I communicate with my child. I listen to the music that he listens to. And the other thing is that my son always wants me to... he wants to share these things with me, right? And it's funny because, you know, when they're younger, you know, before the preteens, it's all about you and mommy. Mommy can do all the things with you. And then the preteens, you know, until, you know, just about 19, 20 now, he didn't really want me involved. But now he shares a lot of what he enjoys, what he likes. He talks about, you know, why he likes those things, why he listens to that music, the influences that it has on him, how it helps him navigate and move through society. And so, yeah, Shashan, he shares a lot with me, movies he likes, books he reads, music he listens to. So I'm on the flip side of mommy.
Thank you for sharing that, Leah. Well, and
Tyshawn, you know, sounds like when we are discussing, if we, you know, we delve into that particular topic again, we always want to have someone that's talking from experience and not just external knowledge. And sounds like someone at some point that we can invite, you know, on our podcast to talk about his experience, or, you know, maybe he has a couple of friends that is experiencing the same kind of stuff. So it sounds like we should think about that in the future.
Right, because it is interesting how a Chicago genre of music influences individuals around the nation. Like you said, mm-hmm. It started in Chicago, but there was the big drill music scene in New York, and with all the gangs, and it was Deadly Dare, right? Deadly Dare in New York. One thing I wanted to touch upon this, and I'm interested in you guys' thoughts, is the fact that it almost seems like a two-edged sword here, right? Well, we have this music that's used, I got something white right here. We have this music, right, that's used as a means of encouragement for violence and destruction within the community, right? But then we also hear the conversation of where we have this music that also is an outlet, right? It's an outlet. It's a way up out of the community. So there's a certain way that you can, you know, individuals, like you said, are savvy, in which they begin to say, hey, we can use this facade, right? And this is, we can commoditize that, right? and we could get about the hood. People want to see violence. They want to see conflict. And it's almost like you have some individuals that are really real, involved in the street life, right? And you have some individuals that, how you say, that are capping, right? I shouldn't even say capping. That's too strong on a negative when I'm talking something where they're thinking about we're moving. We're using this music. The people are going to gravitate towards this, and this is going to bring us a lot of streams on Instagram, or this is going to get us into a record deal. And then I can move my family. I can move my sisters and brothers and aunties and uncles off the hood. I could buy my mother a car. So I'm just kind of interested in you guys' thoughts on that.
My thoughts on that, Tyshawn, much like anything else that happens in the African-American community, violence is promoted, right? And I'm wondering, because but I don't know, but I'm wondering if that's the only way that they're able to get record deals. That's the only way they're getting promoted, right? Because if they go in a different direction and make a different type of music that doesn't speak to what the powers to be are looking for, right? Will they still get that same recognition? Will they get them same deals, right? So I'm just wondering if it's not being strategically done the way that it's being done, right? Because we have the Michael Jacksons of the world, right? And we know that most of what Michael Jackson did was fueled by his addiction, right? And so we only found out the depth of his addiction once he died, right? But nobody really gave a lot of thought to why is this man transforming himself from that of an African-American man to that of something else. What else is going on behind the scenes? They weren't really interested in what was going on with his mental illness or his mental health. Of course, it became widely talked about once he was gone. But again, I'm wondering how much of it's strategically done, because that is the only way. That is the only way for them to prosper and move ahead, because it kind of justifies what white America would like to believe about African American or you know, black and brown people.
So I agree. I was going to add something, but Mr. Allen, I wanted to know, did you have a point you wanted to share with the group? I think what Lael said was right on point with a point that the author, Forrest Stewart, pointed out in the book. I was going to share that, but let Mr. Allen speak.
I think if I heard correct, right? I think I heard you guys talk about Ty. Anyway, talk about the authenticity of certain rappers, and you as well, Alfonso, when you talking about that book, and you talk about that when you read it, it's not really as it appears on the surface, because when you dwell in it, you see these different types of personalities, and it reminded me of there was a rap battle between 50 Cent and this rapper, what's his name?
Ja Rule.
No, not Ja Rule.
Was it Ja Rule? That was the famous one.
About this cat really got down on 50 Cent. He made the one when he talked about Denzel had to get crooked to get it. Remember when he won the... You help me out, Ty.
I'm trying to, man. I'm like Jadakiss. I'm like, Jadakiss.
Jadakiss. Talking about Jadakiss. And that he had a rap battle and he really came down on 50 Cent. And he was talking about how he was perpetrating 50 Cent, that is. You know, saying that, you know, he was this thug out of Brooklyn. But they say, yo, you from Connecticut. You live in Connecticut. You know what I'm saying? You're not really that. So what that did, in my ears anyways, is it took away authenticity away from 50 Cent about gangster rap. You know what I mean? Because he was portraying himself as this gangster. And Jadakiss came out and said, no, 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 be real. You ain't that. He came out with it. No, he really talked about him real bad. And so and that's what I hear you guys talking about, that some things and some of those folks are not as they appear. However, taking it from Leo's perspective, yes, it is a means to an end. You know, it is what sells records. It's what people want to hear. Now, here's it. We distinguish him from real live experiences that people are talking about or rapping about, and we're talking about another group that's imitating these experiences based on what they hear because they don't actually have the actual experience.
I think
I would. Oh, go ahead.
Yeah, I think though, check this out. I was listening to YouTube the other day, and 50 said something to a member of Jadakiss rap group, which was the Lox, Styles P. And he told Styles P, he told him that if you weren't changed by money, then you didn't make enough money, right? And I thought that was a very significant point, because I guess the whole goal of using hip hop, I would say, drill music and things like that, is to actually move up out the hood to make enough money to where you're living money. Good, right? So, you know, so it's like, but the problem is that's what I'm getting at. The problem is that individual, not everybody sees it that way. Like there are individuals that literally take everything verbatim. They take it at face value, so that they see if 21 Savage says I killed 21 people and I got away with it. Guess what? Somebody's believing him, right? Somebody's believing in him, and somebody is looking to kind of copycat or duplicate 21 Savage activity. And I saw in this video that 21 Savage was like, you know, I don't, the reason why 21 Savage is a hip hop he's younger hip hop artist right now, right, popular. He said the reason why I talk about this stuff, drugs and violence and sex and everything like that. He said he knows that it's sex. He knows that.
Everybody, I wanted to welcome Sister Melinda. I see that she joined. And Rob is here. Welcome back. Just to catch everybody up again, we're just on the topic right now of drill music. We were talking about the book by Mr. Forrest Stewart. It's titled The Ballad of the Bullet, Gangs, Drill Music, and the Power of Online Infamy, and how this relates to issues surrounding drug addiction, violence, and also popularity and upward mobility. These are all intertwined. Leal had provided an excellent piece earlier, which echoed sort of what Brother Tayshaun said about how utilizing this, or individuals try to utilize this music as a way out, and how larger forces, namely the industry, is utilizing it because it creates a lot of wealth for themselves, and it's a way to push this forward. And I think what we're trying to do is we're trying to talk about the consequences, both to the individual and the community at large. And also, since ultimately, as individuals operating in the addiction space, we're trying to come up with solutions to the problem. Is this form of upward mobility contributing to our problem, making it worse, or Are we providing a legitimate means? And I just wanted to throw one thing out that came from the book. The author actually looked at the early 19th century in France. They had a competition in which they would invite artists to participate. And what they noticed was that the artists that were connected had money and galleries and stuff like that. They would come up with work, which was very powerful. The poorer artists couldn't afford that. So the way that they made their works get noticed was to exaggerate those aspects of their communities, which were distasteful. And in doing this, they gained the attention of society at large, and then they were able to amplify. So whatever was thought to be grotesque or mean or undesirable, they flipped the switch and amplified that. And as a result, they gained tremendous success and notoriety. And in the book, Sir Stewart makes the analogy that that's what happens today. And a lot of the young men and women who engage in, you know, we're talking about drill music in Chicago Joe specifically, they were doing this as a way to take advantage of what they called the attention economy. And what the attention economy is it's what's created online by clicks and likes and favorites and all of these things. And advertisers and individuals will pay lots of money to get in front of the folks who can attract that sort of attention. So if you have a viral video in this scene currently, it's tremendous in terms of what you can bring. And you can literally change the life of yourself and all those affiliated with you. But at the cost, unfortunately, of what's going on in the community. I'll stop
before
there.
We go any further discussing anything, we got to continue with the folks introducing themselves and why they're here and say a little thing, because we kind of got away from that. So before we started talking, Rob was getting ready to introduce himself.
Rob,
you have the I'm going to put myself on mute, and you have the speaker, the mic.
Okay, can y'all hear me clear? Okay, that's good. I'm a public servant. I work for VOA, which is Volunteers of America, a co-occurring house with men that suffers from substance abuse and mental health. Also, I work for Boston Healthcare for the Homeless, a women's shelter that has mental health and also substance abuse problem. I'm in this field because I took a class at BACE, which is for the BIPOC community, for our people to learn to work with our people that's in the addiction field and people that look like us that understands the problems that we have. And we can relate to them because we have family members and been in the field with experience. Secondly, I would just like to touch on the drill music. I wasn't too abreast with it, but I've been looking into it. And the more I'm finding is that a lot of these kids have dreams of making it out and they make the money to make it out and they get killed or their life get cut down before they can actually make that change for them, for their family. They have a success in music that's going and everything, but they don't get to enjoy it. And it's something like Pop Smoke. He's like still number 2, 3, top 10, but he's not able to enjoy the fruits of that labor. And it depends on what type of management that he had, whether his family even, because he may not even own nothing on his own music. So, and one other thing I would just like to add is my son's 35, and I say, yo, man, what's up with drill music? It's like, man, I heard so much of that stuff, man. I'm tired of hearing that. And then I have another son that's 30, and he's like, yo, dad, that's popping. What you know about that? And I said, I'm learning about it. So, you know, that's my interest. And then I've been asking people, young men, hey, what's up with drill music? And I've been getting their feedback on it. And that 19 to 30, they're rocking with it. That 30 to 35, 30, they kind of like over it. And they're trying to get their life together. I seen the scene. So since we've been talking about this drill music, that's what I've seen. And, you know, they got this new stuff called Tina. They got Molly. you know what I mean, some of the stuff that was mentioned that wasn't mentioned when we was talking about the drugs that's associated with it. And, you know, it's just like it coincides with trap music, the trap music's after it. And it's like Young Dolph out there in, I think, Tennessee that got cut down. A lot of what I find and see, they when they are able to move their family out, the community, and move the children, mother, grandmother, they actually come back. And when they try to do good, that's when they get got. You know what I mean? When they try to come back and pay homage to the homies and try to keep it real. You know what I mean? Keep that authenticity. Try to keep that, you know, that edge. Like, I moved out, but I still come back. I show love. I break people off. I finance some things that may be illegal, because in that drill music, some of the people come back and they finance some of the other guys that can't actually make a record deal or get a record deal, but not part of their entourage, but they finance their weed deal, their coke deal, their heroin deal. And so that way they keep their ties. Like, yo, this is Dolph's, you know, this like that. So he's still in the forefront of that underground activity, but he's living above because he have record sales and stuff like that. So that's my take on some of this. Thank you.
Thank you. Leo.
Good evening. I'm Lael. I am here as a guest because I am a person with substance use disorder. I worked in the field of addiction services pretty much most of the 30 years that I've been in this process of recovery. I most recently graduated from BASE as well. And I just wanted to participate and, you know, offer up my contribution.
Tyshawn.
Yeah, once again, I'm just glad that you yourself, Mr. Allen and Dr. Alfonso, that y'all put some ideas into action and decided to make a platform for BIPOC Black people, especially dealing with specific Black issues. I think it's a necessity. It's a great platform. So my name is Tyshawn Perryman. I graduated from the BASE class as well. A person in long-term recovery, coming up on October 15th, will be 7 years. Been doing street outreach for who knows how long, you know, almost for like over 20 plus years. Worked as a certified addiction recovery coach, working to become a licensed alcohol and drug counselor. Have a bachelor's in mass communications from HBCU. North Carolina Central University, Eagle Pride, Durham, North Carolina, shout out. And, you know, I'm here because, you know, I appreciate the platform. I know that there's a need for voices to be heard, and especially when it comes to a BIPOC and addiction recovery.
Thank you. Sister Melinda.
Sister Melinda Pellerin. I'm a sister of St. Joseph of Springfield, Massachusetts. We're all over the country and around the world. I'm a Catholic religious sister. 7 years ago, when I was in novitiate, that's where when women who are entering religious orders study, I selected a position of ministry in a woman's transitional home, women with alcohol and drug-related issues. So that's when the second time I became face-to-face with addiction and how it affects specifically women on the west side of Chicago. And so I became interested in how I could, as an individual woman help other women. So we set up educational programs. We had a sewing program. We had a counseling program. And I work with another sister, religious sister from another religious order, who was the director of the program. So that's how I became interested in it. Before I was a sister of St. Joseph, I was married, and the person that I married was and he always said recovering, because you're never recovered. He had been sober. His drug of choice was alcohol for 20 years before I met him. And our dating consisted of going to AA meetings. And so I just really learned about addiction and alcohol. I had not experienced any of this before. What I found out was that alcohol and drugs, it's throughout, it's not selective. And I saw a lot of my colleagues in the rooms, a lot of teachers that I didn't know before I started going with him. So that's sort of how I became interested in working with people, journeying with them, listening to them, doing as much as I could and can to help people that are struggling with drugs and alcohol. And so I graduated from the base program. I did a little research on, because I knew nothing about, I didn't even know what you were all talking about last week, drill what. I didn't, so I looked it up, and it seems like it's probably started in the Chicago area, and the writer that the piece that I read, which history is always extremely important to me, says that if you want to talk about drill music, you have to talk about the culture of Chicago in the 1950s and 60s. In 1965, when Martin Luther King came to Chicago, he was shocked to realize that Black people in Chicago, it wasn't the same. It wasn't segregation like Jim Crow laws in Chicago. It was segregation for Black people because of economics and their living situation. So he knew right away that the problems that he was talking about in the civil rights movement down south were not the same problems that African Americans had, specifically in the poorest of the poor areas of Chicago. And some of the music and the themes come out of that division in Chicago. I only read one writer, but in the discussion of this, I would be very much interested in just going deeper and looking at the psychology of this music and like where is it drawn from, where does it come from. So I decided to join the podcast because I was interested in the professional discussions that we're possibly going to be having. I also graduated from the base program recently.
Thank you. Alfonso.
Hello, everybody. My name is Alfonso Brown. You guys all know me, and I'm a recent base graduate. And I want to give a shout out again to my esteemed colleagues. This level of discussion is tremendous. I enjoyed a lot. I'm a practicing clinician. I run an addiction specialties clinic at New Beginning Health PC in Weymouth, Massachusetts. We've done that for the last 8 years. I also have a faculty appointment at Harvard Medical School where I'm a practicing clinician. Very, very much interested in issues within the BIPOC community as they relate to alcohol and drug addiction. I'm a kid of I spent my young adulthood in New York City at the time of the crack epidemic. I have personal experience and exposure to this. Individuals in my family dealt drugs and also had many friends who went to jail and died it's part of that. It left in me a lifelong desire to try to utilize whatever means I had through work and exposure through activities such as treatment and counseling to help individuals who are in recovery and to also better understand why these particular things seem to infiltrate our community and create so much problems for us. So I've been blessed and very thankful for this format and this opportunity to work with my colleagues. I know all of you very well, and I know for the listeners out there, this will be a treat because we have some very great minds here who are going to provide insight and information in real time. Yep. Right.
Thank you. I think we've come about to the end of our time, but before we do, I want to not talk about it, but let you guys know about next week's topic. I've taken the liberty to come up with the first one. This is, of course, from Alfonso. Next week, and I'm pretty sure everybody has a article on it. We're going to be talking about overdose death rates that increased amongst African Americans, American Indians, and Alaska Native people. So we're going to really get down and really let's start talking about addiction. Okay, so that will be next week's topic. Okay, and until then, till next week at 3 o'clock, is it, Alfonso?
It's 3:30, sir.
3:30. Oh, well, I was on at 3 o'clock waiting. Okay.
I'm sorry.
It's now 4:43. So we've been going almost an hour and 15 minutes. Our podcast is for 1 hour. It's supposed to be from 3:30 to 4:30. So remember, take a look at the article, folks, and our discussion next week. Again, I repeat, overdose death rates that are increasing for African-Americans, American Indians, and Alaska Native folks, primarily the BIPOC communities.
And if anybody doesn't have the article, just reach out. We can send it. And Mr. Allen, is it okay to say also if people have related articles, they should feel free to review those?
Yes. I would like for folks to be able to talk about their specific communities and their personal experiences with this, because I'm quite sure if we're those of us that's in this field, we all know folks either from a personal perspective or professional that have overdosed and died from a drug overdose. There's not one of us in this field that doesn't know someone. You know, and we can talk about how that made us feel and the reason that caused a folk after X amount of time in recovery to use and overdose. Okay, so until next week, I will say have a good weekend, everybody, rest of the weekend, that is, and stay healthy, stay cool, and be ready for next week.
I appreciate you all.